In an age of treachery and peril, a young thief may be the prophesied savior or the betrayer of the world. Fortress Draconis by Michael A. Stackpole. A quarter century previous, an elven seer spoke the Norrington prophecy. A Norrington to lead them, immortal, washed in fire, victorious from sea to ice. Power of the North he will shatter, the scourge he will kill. Then Vorquellen will redeem. For 25 years, the world has awaited a hero, and now the world's fate rests in the hands of a nimble-fingered young thief.
Fortress Draconis, Chapter 1. Will shivered in the wet and rain, but clenched his jaw so his teeth would not chatter. The drops came down big and fat, colder too than he expected so late in summer. They splashed against the tile roof, spattering him and pockmarking the shifting surface of the puddles down in the street. The threadbare scrap of blanket beneath which he huddled shielded him from their buffets, but let their cold soak straight into him. The youth had no question that being elsewhere would be preferable, certainly warmer, if nothing else, but he refused to move on. Though he risked catching his death of cold by remaining, running away would kill him as well. "I do this," he thought, "and everything will be okay again." He raised the blanket a mite and shook his head, letting water spray off his long brown hair. Leaning his head to the right, he let some water drip out of his ear and listened. The drumming of the raindrops hid almost all sound, but little bits of laughter drifted up from the public house's common room down on the ground level. He shifted slightly to his right, making no more noise than a squab mite scrabbling for dry amid the roof's red tiles. Peering down from the roof's ridge, he could no longer see yellow light peeking out from behind the attic room's shuttered window. Will couldn't help but let a smile blossom on his face. About damn time. Throwing off the blanket, he began to unwind the knotted rope from around his waist. As he coiled it on the roof, he nodded slowly and whispered to himself, "Damn the Vorks, damn their eyes. Let them drink. I'll have their prize." As poetry went, he knew it wasn't much, but felt the little verse was the seed of something larger. It'd be a piece of a great saga minstrels would sing about his life. And sing they will of Will the Nimble, King of the Dim and Downs. I'll make them forget Marcus, Scabby Jack, and Garrow. I'll even make them forget the Azure Spider. He crawled along the roof's beam to where a piece overhung the alley. He looped the rope over the end of it, then snugged it tight. Tugging on it twice to assure himself it would hold, he started down it, letting the rope slide between his toes until he could rest his weight on a knot. Little by slowly he descended, reaching out to touch the building and kill any swing on the rope. Finally, he hung there, right in front of the attic window. The dagger he drew from the sheath at the small of his back slid neatly into the gap between the shutters. Will worked it up, and between two rusty nail heads, his blade met the latch. Lifting easily, he slipped it, and the shutters sagged outward, opening with a lazy sigh. The thief shook his head as he resheathed the dagger. Stupid Vorks deserve to lose their prize, he thought. As anxious as he was to get his hands on it, he didn't reach for the shutters immediately, but waited a bit more, listening. No time for mistakes now. He'd been pleased at how well the plan had come together, and he was fair certain Marcus and Fabia would be too. He'd woven it together from things he knew they'd forgotten, like Fabia talking glowingly about the Vorquelf predator, leader of the Grey Mist, as if he were King Augustus warring against the North. Predator could tell all that he hated men, and he'd only ever shown Will the cold side of a sneer and the hard fast of a fist. But to hear Fabia tell it, he loved the warmth of a woman. He favored her with his attentions forever ago, when she wasn't so fat that only Marcus would have her. She told tales of his having a treasure she'd never seen, but she knew it was there. Once she'd awakened deep in the night, still drunk, and had seen his face backlit in the glow of something he cupped in his hands. Fabia said he smiled whiter than he ever had in her arms. When she asked him what it was, he said she was dreaming, and in telling the tale to the younglings, she'd allow us how she likely was dreaming, since Predator would have long ago drunk up anything so precious. Will had always believed her telling the story as a dream, until there came a time he thought on it for a while. Then he sought out the woman Predator was currently using. Lumina laughed when Will clowned for her, and cooed over the little things he'd steal and give her, be they bits of pastries or a bright button. She'd reward him with a kiss, clearly assuming that he had a crush on her. The fact that he did didn't keep him from his mission, and eventually she was coaxed into revealing a tale close enough to Fabia's that Will knew the Vorkwelf was hiding something valuable. It hadn't been hard for Will to convince himself that whatever the treasure was, it was meant to be his, for as long as he could remember, which went a bit further back before Marcus and Fabia had taken him in, but not much. He'd hated the Vorkwelves. The exiled elves had long ago claimed the Downs as their own domain in Yuzlin. As hard times hit, the area around the Downs began to decay. Beggars and thieves, whores and the halt, most all men, came to live in the shadows of the city's heart. Their neighborhoods became called the Dim, and the Hightown folks dismissed the whole area as the Dim and Downs. The Vorkwelfs constantly fought against the growing human population, and the only time human officials came into the area was to press gang the unwary into crewing on galleys sailing the Crescent Sea. Will's hatred for the Vorkwelfs found an ally in Marcus. Will could remember how the man had brought him into their home, a big building in the Dim, and had housed him with other children. Marcus taught them about thieving and worse, and sent them out into the city. In return for bringing back spoils, children were fed and clothed and not beaten too often. Those who were especially good were taken to the harvest festival in the autumn, though the recent affairs in no way matched what Fabia had talked about in her stories of festivals past. Marcus and Fabia had always done for Will, but he did remember that they'd not always done so for everyone. The girls, when they reached a certain age, were trained for other things. Lumina hadn't been one of them, but plenty of Will's sisters plied the lift skirt trade. The boys, when they reached what Marcus called willfulness, went away, never to be seen again. Over the years, the age when willfulness manifested seemed to get younger. Beatings and kids getting vanished seemed to come more frequently with every new cycle of songs devoted to the master thief, the Azure Spider. Will could remember the days when Marcus used to claim with pride having been the spider's mentor, but of late he'd been bitter and resentful. He took those feelings out on his male charges, many of whom, Will suspected, Marcus believed would betray him and leave for glory as the spider had done. Will had no intention of doing that, and hoped pulling off a job like this, which would have been worthy of the Azure Spider, would impress Marcus. He knew that planning and executing this theft would likely brand him as willful, but he hoped that by bringing the treasure to Marcus, he'd show how loyal he intended to be. "He'll have no excuse to send me away. None at all." Confident that nothing lived or breathed in the darkened room, Will opened a shutter, grabbed the inside of a casement, and pulled himself in. He kept hold of the rope with his toes so it slithered in after him. Crouching by the window, water dripping into a puddle beneath him, Will studied the room carefully. He dearly wished his heart would stop pounding so loudly in his ears, but the tumult of drunken conversation from below would have hidden the approach of a dragon. Staying low and spreading his weight out on his hands and feet, Will scuttled across the floor. Lamplight from below bled up through cracks between planks, striping chairs, bed, and wardrobe with a soft yellow glow. Small and light though he was, he knew the uneven boards would be creaking with his passage, but he felt certain those sounds went unheard. He made his way to the wardrobe and carefully felt around the base molding. Lumina said she'd seen Predator kneeling there, his body washed in silver, but he thought nothing of it. Tracing his fingers along the baseboard, Will sought a catch or a lever to reveal a hidden compartment. He found nothing so sophisticated. His fingers caught against a piece of the base that jutted out just a hair. Hooking his fingers into the gap, he teased it free without so much as a squeak. A little block of wood as long as his hand came free. In the cavity behind it, he found a leather pouch heavy enough for a silver or two, and a lighter velvet pouch. The latter had something in it, but he couldn't tell what. He slipped the leather pouch beneath his belt and knew he should head out before examining his other find, but he needed to make certain he really had gotten his hand on Predator's treasure. Slender fingers unmade the knot holding the bag shut, then peeled the velvet away, letting a blinding argent light shine forth. Will squinted against the brilliance, at once entranced and puzzled. The treasure looked like a leaf. He knew it was from a tree, but what kind he had no idea, since trees were few in the Dim and Downs. The leaf blazed with a silver light and appeared to be metal, but had none of the heft it would have had if it were cast in silver. More impressively, it had the supple texture and flexibility of a living leaf. "I don't know what it is, but it is a treasure." For the barest of moments, Will considered tucking it back in its hidey hole. Just having disturbed it felt somehow wrong, and the idea that taking something that didn't belong to him was wrong had seldom occurred to him before. At the same time, it also felt wrong for this leaf to remain shut up in a little hole. He sensed another purpose to it, as if there was something he was supposed to do with it. Suddenly, shouting arose from below, and something shattered against the floorboards. Ale sprayed up through a crack. Wet as he was, he couldn't feel it hit him, but he could smell it. In an instant, he knew the silver light had been seen by someone below, and that the thundering came from feet on the stairs leading to the upper floor. Without a second thought, and with the skill born of more than a decade's thievery, Will stuffed the leaf into the bag and tucked it into his belt. He darted toward the window, tumbling a chair in his wake, and dove for the rope as the room's door burst inward. The rope bumped and slithered knot by knot out behind him, chased by curses of a Vork who hit the chair and fell. Out into the night Will sailed, snapping his legs up, hoping he could loop his way back onto the roof. Though his feet came up above the level of the roof, he couldn't get far enough over to land there, so he twisted around as he descended again in a short, tight arc. A waiting Vork smiled, reaching out for him as he returned. Will kicked one of the shutters around, slamming it flat against the Vork's face, spilling him back into the room. As quickly as he could, controlling his fall more than actually climbing, he let himself down and reached the alley seconds before a sword sliced the rope free from above. Will crouched, found a rock with his right hand, and sent it flying back up at the window. The pale face that had been leering at him snapped back in the darkness. Will darted off along the alley, hitting the street and cutting right. That route would actually take him deeper into the downs, which he figured would confuse the Vorks. He ran as fast as he could, splashing through puddles, leaping over the dead bodies of animals, hoping the battering rain would aid him by erasing all traces of his passage. Aid him it did in some ways, for nothing could have tracked him by sight or scent as the rain washed away his spoor almost instantly. Even so, the rain betrayed him in more important ways, which he slowly came to understand as he raced past cloaked figures skulking and through the streets and close by soaked curs that barked and howled at him. This is not the way to go. The Downs have been called the Downs because the city of Yuzlin sunk to its lowest level there. At high tide, some of the streets would flood, and although high tide lay hours yet away, the day's downpour had flooded the streets into brown rapids thick with debris. The street along which he ran dipped into a raging torrent. His course blocked, Will turned north, dashing toward an alley mouth. He could hear his pursuers after him and knew he should toss away his loot. The leather bag with coins he tugged free of his belt and dropped behind him without a second thought. When his fingers touched the velvet bag, however, it felt warm and dry, and he knew he wouldn't let anyone take it from him. Not them, not Marcus, not anyone. Will put his head down and started running in earnest when the rain's second betrayal occurred. He sprinted through a puddle that hid in its murky depths a missing cobblestone. The youth caught his right foot in the hole and stumbled, smashing his right knee into the roadway. The cobblestones, while soaked with rain, had not been softened, so the blow drove a jolt of pain up and down his leg. His ankle twisted before his foot came free. He rolled over on his back, clutching his knee in both hands. Cold rain splashed his face, and colder laughter rang in his ears. A knot of Orc elves towered over him. The silver moonlight made them into ghosts, and what he could see of their faces indicated they were most malevolent. One bled from a cut in his forehead. Will took some joy in knowing the rock had flown true, and another's nose looked to be swelling. Predator leaned down and grabbed Will by the front of his tunic. Should have known it was you. No one else would have been so stupid. Stupid was making it so easy. The Vorkwelf, his sapphire eyes glowing in the moonlight, raised a fist. It won't be easy on you, little Will. Give it back. It struck Will as peculiar that Predator just didn't pull the bag off his belt. It was there in plain sight. Will could feel its warmth against his right hip. He wanted to tell Predator to take it, but that idea died quicker than a lightning flash. You'll never find it now. It's halfway to the sea. Predator screamed and his fist fell heavily. Will caught it on the right side of his face and saw stars. He didn't think he'd been hit that hard, but he found himself on the ground, his face throbbing. A rasped, edged voice cut through the ringing in Will's ears. I told you years ago, if you ever touched one of them, you'd regret it. Predator whirled to face a hulking human silhouette limned in silver. But before he could square around, a fist flew and caught the Vork straight in the face. Predator's nose cracked sharply. Verquelf tumbled back and splashed down in a puddle. From the way his body bounced and his arms and legs flopped, Will knew Predator had been senseless before he hit the ground. The other gray misters pulled back away from the figure, hands falling to the hilts of daggers and swords. Poor fool should have stayed out of what wasn't his business. Will gathered his legs beneath him as best he could and began to inch away, and his head and shoulders butted up against something solid. He looked up, saw a massive Vork looming over him, and yelped. The other Vorkwelves looked down at him, and then their heads rose as they studied the elf standing over him. One of the gray misters raised his hands, open and easily. We don't want any trouble, Resolute, but he stole something from Predator. We can't have that. this stripling stole from you?" Resolute laughed, and the mere sound of it seemed to stagger some of the misters. "What was it he stole?" The mister shrugged. "I don't know. Predator said it was important." Resolute dropped to a knee and plucked the velvet pouch from Will's belt. Will grabbed for his forearm, but his cold, wet fingers found no purchase on the Vorquel's thickly tattooed flesh. "That's mine." "Is it now?" Resolute stood and opened the bag. Silver light poured out over his face, illuminating argent eyes in a snarl. The Vorquel's hands closed the bag quickly. Then he took a step into the middle of the misters and kicked Predator hard in the ribs. "Get him out of here, the lot of you. He's jeopardized everything with his greed. Get him gone before I kick his belly through his spine." The Vorquel spun and pointed a finger at Will. "And you're going nowhere." The anger in his voice froze Will where he was. The misters each grabbed an ankle or wrist and dragged Predator away. As they hauled him off, Resolute kicked water at them, hissing curses in Elvish. The other figure, which Will discovered to be a white-haired man with a thick white beard, crouched down beside him. "How's that knee?" Will shrugged. The man looked up at Resolute. "Think he's the one? Hardly washed in fire here." Vorquelf nodded, a thick stripe of white hair on his head glistening with rain. "Yes, but a piece of Vorquelin he did redeem." Will shook his head. "What are you talking about?" Resolute tied the velvet bag to his belt. "You'll learn, eventually."
"Maybe I won't."
The Vorquelf and the man both hauled him to his feet. "You will learn if all things turn out the way they are meant to."
"And if I don't?"
"You aspire to what, boy? Growing up to be the Azure Spider, the Prince of Shadows? You want to be a master thief?" Resolute slowly shook his head. "Your life is wasted. Having it shortened will just save you pain."
Fortress Draconis is copyright 2001 by Michael A. Stackpole and is read by the author. To learn more about him and his work, please visit his website at www.stormwolf.com. This book is available from fine booksellers worldwide. This podcast was produced by Jamie Jordan and is hosted by CatAlley.com. The theme music is an original composition by Nuada and is used with permission. The podcast is copyright 2007 by Michael A. Stackpole. Please join us again for the next exciting chapter of Fortress Draconis.